This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This week has brought a breakthrough in the Iran-Contra investigation and a setback for Robert Gates, the president's nominee to direct the CIA. On Tuesday, Alan Fiers became the first former CIA official to admit criminal conduct in the Iran-Contra scandal and the first to agree to cooperate with the Iran-Contra investigation. Fiers directed the CIA's covert operations in Central America from 1984 to 86. This week in federal court, he pleaded guilty to withholding information from Congress about the Reagan administration's secret arms for hostages deal and the diversion of funds to the Contras. He confessed that he had information about the secret deal and that he told his superiors about it. Fiers said that one of those superiors, Claire George, who was the third-ranking CIA official, instructed him to lie to Congress. Fiers' testimony may lead to new information about Robert Gates, who was the deputy director of the CIA during the Iran-Contra affair. So the Senate Intelligence Committee has postponed its confirmation hearings on Gates. We've invited Tim Weiner to put these events in context. Weiner is a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, based in Washington. Weiner says there is no evidence that Gates knew about the Iran-Contra affair.
There is no evidence, none, that Bob Gates, who was then the number two man at the CIA and at times acting director when the then director, William Casey, was overseas, there's no evidence on the record that Bob Gates knew about the diversion. He had had hints, and he has testified, and he testified 4 years ago when he was nominated to become director, that he had had hints. But he said they were sketchy, and although they startled him, he wasn't sure that they were true. And he'd known about this allegation for 8 weeks before the whole world knew about it. But he didn't really look into it because he didn't want to know what was going on in Central America because the CIA was barred from running guns down there, which it was helping the White House to do.
I don't understand still what would be his logic for not wanting to know.
Because it was illegal for the CIA, it was guilty knowledge, it was illegal for the CIA, Congress had banned it from providing lethal aid to the Contras. Now the White House, in the person of Ollie North and John Poindexter and National Security Council operatives and hirelings, had a pretty large-scale, multi-million dollar gun-running operation going on down there. And it has been alleged that the CIA was providing a fair amount of support to that operation. But Bob Gates has testified under oath for four and a half years now, that he didn't want to know what was going on because the CIA wasn't allowed to be involved in this.
Couldn't you say that somebody in the position that he was in has the responsibility to get to the bottom of things if they think that there's the possibility of misbehavior going on in their own operation?
Well, officials of the Central Intelligence Agency are required by an executive order of the president to report evidence of wrongdoing or of illegalities to an intelligence oversight board, and by implication, by informal arrangement, they're also supposed to tell the House and Senate intelligence committees about it. But Gates has said that the evidence that he heard was really not much more than sort of corridor gossip.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Tim Weiner. He's a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's based in Washington, and he's covering the stories of Fiers and Gates for the Inquirer. Now let's get back to Fiers and then we'll return to the story of Gates. How does the new information that we have now from Fiers open up the Iran-Contra investigation?
Well, to put it in some perspective, this is the first time in the 44-year history of the Central Intelligence Agency that a CIA officer has walked into a courtroom, said, "I'm guilty of a crime," and has agreed to cooperate with a federal investigation of wrongdoing at the CIA. Fiers has seriously implicated Claire George, who was chief of covert operations at the CIA from 84 to 88, in this cover-up. He has said that two men, both of whom held the post of chief of the Latin American division, whose names we are not allowed to utter, knew about the diversion. There is evidence on the record that other people at the CIA knew about the diversion. There is some suggestion that the National Security Agency, which conducts electronic eavesdropping overseas and is actually a much larger organization than the CIA, had picked up telephone conversations and perhaps other telecommunications concerning this diversion. What Fires has done is to establish that there was a criminal cover-up at the CIA and has, by implication, sort of darkened the atmosphere of the confirmation hearings of Bob Gates, the second round of confirmation hearings since Gates was nominated in 87, which he has caused their delay, and he has sort of exhumed the ghost of Bill Casey, the CIA director under whose aegis this all took place. Casey's ghost is now sort of floating around here in the atmosphere in Washington.
Now, the confirmation hearings for Gates have been delayed. Can you explain the reasons for the delay?
Well, the Senate Intelligence Committee, which has to pass on Bob Gates' nomination, is a body of 15 politicians, 8 Democrats and 7 Republicans. And after Fires pleaded guilty on Tuesday, they were given pause. They would like to call Alan Fires, and perhaps disastrously for independent counsel Walsh's investigation, they would also like to call Claire George, who hasn't been accused of anything but may soon be accused of something serious, to tell them, presumably what's on the public record in Fires' case, to tell them what they know about Bob Gates's knowledge of this affair. Fires stood outside the courthouse after his guilty plea and said, "I didn't tell Bob Gates. I don't, you know, Bob Gates didn't know about this." In doing so, they have really ticked off President Bush by delaying the hearings, the Intelligence Committee has, and sort of put him into a kind of a confirmation limbo, which happens sometimes in Washington.
It's a little bit of conflict now between the Iran-Contra prosecutor Lawrence Walsh and the Senate Intelligence Committee, because the committee wants to have testimony by George, by Claire George, and also by Alan Fires. But Walsh doesn't want them to testify yet.
Because Walsh is proceeding by the rules of legal procedure, and the Senate Intelligence Committee is proceeding by the rules of, a political body. And, it's sort of deja vu all over again, unfortunately, because Congress granted some immunity to Oliver North and John Poindexter to get them to testify in 1987 at the Iran-Contra hearings. And in doing so, threw a hand grenade into the legal structure of Lawrence Walsh's cases, that immunity has resulted in the, in part, has resulted in the vacating of Oliver North's convictions, and may result in the vacating of John Poindexter's convictions. Walsh does not want his witnesses, or his witness, Alan Fires, up there testifying before he gets him into a courtroom.
It might hurt his case.
It would destroy his case, or it could. So we're in a pickle here, but no one is in a worse pickle than Bob Gates is at this point. Here is a man who is a career intelligence bureaucrat who has never run a covert op in his life, who's not a spy. He's an intelligence analyst, okay? And he's also served on the National Security Council staff and now serves as President Bush's deputy national security advisor. He's a desk jockey, okay? He's an apparatchik. And he has to somehow prove this negative that he wasn't mixed up in this crazy covert operation. And unless and until he can prove that negative, he's not going to get confirmed.
President Reagan nominated Robert Gates to be head of the CIA in 87, but Gates eventually withdrew because of Iran-Contra stuff. But he first went through some of the confirmation hearings. What should we know about that he said in those confirmation hearings?
Well, I'd say that 90% of those hearings dealt with Iran-Contra and about 10% of everything else in the intelligence community, which is perhaps unfortunate for Gates. The gist of it happened in an exchange between Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania, who was then on the Intelligence Committee, and Gates. And Specter is saying, look, are you sure you didn't know about this? Quote, it seems that among the few people in Washington who don't know what is happening are the Deputy Director of Central Intelligence, that's Bob Gates, and the Senate Intelligence Committee. And Gates said, well, Senator, you know, one of the aspects of our culture in the CIA is the whole world of compartmentation of operational activities in which we've grown up. If we don't have a perceived need to know about a specific operation, we try not to pursue it. I think if I'd gone in and made a big stink out of it, about it, to Director Casey, I probably could have, you know, found out what was going on. But there's the rub. He didn't know. He didn't know about the diversion. And he has to, you know, defend himself against the fact that here he is at the number two job and he's out of the loop. There was some disbelief as to whether the number two man in the CIA could be that out of the loop. And what's poisoned the atmosphere for Gates now is that we now know that a lot more people at the CIA were in the loop than it were ever known. We know when you take the public record of Iran-Contra and you take Alan Fires' guilty plea of Tuesday, that just about everybody at the top of the chain of command knew about the diversion except Gates. And it's a very uncomfortable position for him.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Tim Weiner. He's a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's based in Washington, and he's covering the nomination of Robert Gates to be head of the CIA, and he's also covering all the new developments in the Iran-Contra scandal. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about the nomination of Robert Gates for CIA director and the latest developments in the Iran-Contra scandal with Philadelphia Inquirer reporter Tim Weiner. Now, some of the information that led to Fires is from tapes of phone conversations between CIA headquarters and agents in the field. It's kind of shocking, isn't it, that after Watergate, conversations that could be incriminating were recorded and stored?
Absolutely not. In fact, the CIA is an extraordinary records-keeping outfit, as is its electronic eavesdropping counterpart, the NSA. I mean, there are miles, acres of computer tapes stored at the NSA, which has the capability of recording every telephone conversation in the world. Is it extraordinary that the CIA kept tapes of overseas conversations? Absolutely not.
Well, what about of incriminating conversations?
They're not incriminating if a prosecutor can't get his hands on them. And I think the assumption at the CIA was certainly not that these phone conversations and transcripts would be surfacing in America in an American courtroom. I think that was the farthest thing from their minds. It is ironic that Claire George, who was chief of the clandestine service, the chief spymaster, set up this taping operation and now may well be hoisted by his own petard.
Well, how did the prosecutor get a hold of these tapes?
Through the American legal process. God bless it. He has in the past been frustrated in his attempts to get documents from the CIA. He had to watch as his case against the former CIA station chief in Costa Rica was scuttled when Attorney General Dick Thornburg and the CIA refused to release documents in the case. But in this instance, the CIA could not make a national security argument that tapes of possibly incriminating telephone conversations involving lies to Congress, that the national security considerations outweighed the legal considerations, the criminal justice considerations in the case. They lost that balancing test.
Why did Alan Fires testify at this time? Why did he come forward and give this information?
Well, that has been the subject of quite a lot of speculation here. Alan Fires said outside the courtroom after he pleaded guilty, that he had lied 4 years ago, 5 years ago, for the good of the country, and now he was telling the truth for the good of the country. A more personal explanation might be that the prosecutors presented him with an unpleasant choice, which is that we know you lied, we can prove it, we have the transcripts, you know you lied, we can indict you for a felony, or you can cooperate, plead guilty to a misdemeanor, and in all likelihood never go to jail.
And the transcripts that the prosecutors had were the transcripts of the phone conversations.
And Alan Fires' own statements to the House and Senate Intelligence Committee and the voluminous, partially declassified depositions taken in the Iran-Contra case, the Iran-Contra investigation by Congress. He was confronted with his own words, and his words were false, and confronted with the choice of going to jail or cooperating. And like many another person has done in that situation, he swallowed hard and fessed up.
Lawrence Walsh, the chief prosecutor of Iran-Contra, has been criticized for a long, drawn-out, very expensive investigation. At the same time, Walsh has criticized the White House, the Justice Department, and the CIA for attempting to insulate and protect people from prosecution. So does the Alan Fires testimony bring us to a new position in the Iran-Contra investigation? What do you think the next step is going to be?
Well, clearly the next step will be to bring Claire George, the former chief of covert operations of the CIA, into play. Mr. George was severely implicated by Alan Fires' confession. I think there may be potential problems for the former Assistant Secretary of State, Elliot Abrams. Abrams sat in a three-man group with Oliver North and Alan Fires that met regularly and, according to Fires, talked very honestly within among themselves. And Fires knew about the diversion. Ollie knew everything that was going on. Either they lied a lot to Elliot Abrams or Elliot Abrams lied to Congress. I do not know where we go beyond there. There is nothing on the face of the Fires case that gives us a roadmap to the future. I do think, though, that there had been a perceived weariness about the Iran-Contra investigation. Lawrence Walsh, the independent counsel, had been frustrated in many, many avenues. And I think the public weariness about the case was a kind of a cynical sense that, you know, they're never going to get anywhere. They'll never find anything out. They'll be stonewalled. They'll be stymied. And the secrets will lie with Bill Casey, rest his soul, and those with guilty knowledge. Well, Lawrence Walsh has cracked some of the insulation that has surrounded this case for 4 years, and the sense of weariness rather quickly evaporated.
Do you think that the timing of these new revelations in Iran-Contra are especially bad for the CIA? You know, we've just ended the war with Iraq. The Cold War with the Soviet Union recently ended. And here we are with new revelations in Iran-Contra.
It is tragic that we are still dancing with the ghost of William Casey, the former CIA director. There is an enormous agenda for Bob Gates or whoever the next director of Central Intelligence is going to be, an enormous list of things to tackle. Where are we going in the world? What the heck is going on in the Middle East? Where are our hostages in Lebanon, the people we were trying to free by selling arms to Iran? What's going on in the Soviet Union? Where is it going? What's going on with global economies? Why is Panama more corrupt and screwed up than it was before we grabbed Noriega? And what should the CIA be doing in a post-Cold War world? We should be talking about those things in the confirmation hearings of the next director in Central Intelligence, and it is a damned shame that all we're going to be able to talk about now is the who shot John of Iran-Contra. That is a loss.
Of course, you're not arguing to not talk about Iran-Contra.
No, but there are many, many important topics to deal with. Look, the CIA gets a pretty bad rap sometimes. A lot of junk is written about it. America has to have an intelligence service. We are the only superpower left on this earth. We have to know what is going on in the world. An intelligence service that finds out what is going on in the world and helps predict what might happen next in the world is absolutely vital to this country. And people ought to sort of grow up and accept that. You know, to have the agency mired in this criminal tragedy is indicative of the costs of secrecy, too. The White House, and it was not the first time either, essentially got fed up with its own CIA and created the CIA outside the CIA to do the kinds of things that the CIA should be doing with the proper oversights. And it shot itself in the foot, and it deeply embarrassed this country and grievously wounded the intelligence community. If we ever get over the Iran-Contra affair, and it looks like it's going to be some time now, we're going to have to learn how we run a good, efficient, lean, smart intelligence service in a democracy. We've had one for almost 50 years now, and we have still not learned how to run secret operations in a democracy without hurting our democracy.
Tim Weiner, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Been a pleasure, Terry.
Tim Weiner is a Washington correspondent for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's also the author of Blank Check, about the Pentagon's secret budget. Blank Check was just published in paperback. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.